This is the Success Coaching Podcast with hosts Todd Foster, Alyssa Stanley, Kelly Scar, and today's guest, Hank Evick.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Success Coaching Podcast. My name is Alyssa Stanley, and I am here with Coach Todd Foster and Coach Kelly Scar. Today, we have an awesome guest whose story is going to impact you and has impacted so many over the years. We are thrilled to welcome my good friend, Hank Evick.
Oh, you are so very kind, my friend. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you kind of tell us a little bit about Hank 2021, and then we'll backtrack a little bit after that.
Hank 2021 is a husband, father, business coach, and those are my priorities. I've been an entrepreneur for 25 plus years, and I've had my ups and I've had my downs, and I'm about as happy as you could be. Life is really good right now.
I'm going to brag on you for just a minute because you're too humble to do it yourself. To add to that, you are the founder of the National Coaching League. You developed the 36 to Life movement, which has taken real estate by storm. And you're a renowned real estate coach. But this success of yours today has been incredibly evolutionary. So could you kind of take us back to Hank, the real estate agent, when your life took like a really brief left turn?
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, on my forearm, I have the tattoo math versus drama. So I'd like you to think about this math right now. We had a four-year-old, had just had another baby born on October 2nd. And we were one day away from my son having open heart surgery. At the time, I had probably, 15 or 18 listings. My wife and I had been married probably 7 or 8 years. So if you look at that math equation, how messed up do you think things were? We were working 20-hour days. It was a tough time. And when Charlie was born, we found out that he had a congenital heart condition, and everything changed. And everything in the world as I knew it suddenly ceased to matter. And so we found ourselves heading over to Ann Arbor, and the reality kicked in that if I didn't show up to work, I wasn't going to get paid. So there was times where I had to make the choice of going to the hospital or going to work. And it was 12 years ago, I decided that I love real estate. I just didn't love the fact that I was only as good as my next 90 days. And I had to show up to do it. And I thought that there's got to be a better way. So over the last 12 years, I've been looking to solve that problem. How do I help people and not have to work nights, weekends, and be beholden to trading dollars for hours for the rest of my life? And happy to say on February 1st, I actually semi-retired and let go of all my trading dollars for hours. And this Labor Day decided to come back because retirement isn't all what it's cracked up to be. And I love helping people.
I want to go back to you saying that you took some time off and you semi-retired. You and I had several discussions during that time, and you made it longer than I thought you would. Yet, what did you self-discover during that time about yourself?
Well, I think it was hard, and you're absolutely right. And I forced myself to make it till Labor Day. One of my friends used the analogy, sometimes you got to let the snow globe settle. And let's face it, it's much easier to remain busy than to actually take a minute to let the snow settle and see what you're doing because it's what you've always done, or what you're doing because you feel that you have to, and really sitting in that. So what I learned about myself was there's probably a lot that I did just because I was so used to doing it.
Give me an example.
You know, it's interesting. One of my buddies, Shaw Hassey out of Canada, said, Hank, scarcity is much easier than abundance, because when you have abundance, you have a lot of choices. And when you no longer have to make decisions based on money or cash flow, you look at things differently. So for example, Todd, you know me, I don't have much of a filter, and I don't do very well with bullshit. And I do a great job of, one of my models is I care more about the person than I do us in the relationship. So I'm willing to call them as I see them. I'm not always right. You know, Alyssa and I had one of those conversations where I called her out because there was more on the line than what she was letting on to. And, you know, we know quite a bit about switch cost. And I think a lot of times people don't realize what's at stake by them not doing what they need to be doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of my superpowers, is really helping people see what the choices are doing by not doing what they need to be doing. And I know, just realized I didn't even answer your question whatsoever.
I knew you were going to do that too, so I'm not surprised. Looking back on it, was it a mistake to take that time off?
I don't know that it was a mistake. One of the principles that I teach to is the success code, and momentum is a sweet place to be. And by taking that step back, it got me out of momentum. Yet I think that's okay. You once said to me, one of the best things to happen to me was my non-compete. And I think it was actually good to step back, because it allowed some space. It allowed some room, because I think so quickly, if we have a 5-gallon bucket of water, we keep 5 gallons in there. And by doing some of that subtraction, I think it's allowed me to look and make decisions based on what can have the greatest impact. Because I think we get into entrepreneurship, as Glenn Sanford says, for freedom. And then once we obtain freedom, we move into purpose. And then from purpose, we move into legacy. And I think that it was important to move from freedom and allow the pause so that we could move into purpose, or what I call impact, and allow that transition to happen.
Do you feel like you're in the purpose part of the equation right now, Hank?
Yeah, it kind of feels like puberty. It feels that awkward stage, because I'm back to being a beginner in a lot of things, where it would have been easy for me to stay in the expert mode. And I think we all need to choose when we peak, and I'm not ready to peak. So now it's going back and learning new skill sets and time on task and experimenting. We're launching a YouTube channel, doing some things with products so that we can have a little bit more scalability and margins. And so it's all decisions on what can have a longer lasting impact than just short-term decisions on what can fulfill us today. And so it's delaying that for more of the leveraged impact versus the short-term.
One thing you are awesome at is keeping a schedule and sticking to it. So what is a typical day for Hank?
Today or over the last 5 years? I've tracked every single hour since January 1st, 2016, when I launched my coaching company. So let's start there. I work Monday through Wednesday, 9 to 5. I drop my kids off at school, and then the day starts, and every hour is held to an outcome. And it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to work the full hour, yet holding it to an outcome. And then Thursdays and Fridays are flex days. So if there's something that we're working on to get off the ground or something, we'll fill that in. Or if we're working on a new project, we'll flex into that. Yet what I found was most people try to outwork stupid. And the interesting thing is, the less I work, the greater results that I get, because all work will expand to the time that's allowed, right? A little bold law from our old job there. And I think when I got real intentional on treating the days as if we didn't have infinite time to work, the results really started to make a difference.
That's deep, man. How did you come to that realization? Seriously, like going to that place in your mind and understanding that time is not infinite and you have to make every hour, every minute, every second count. What got you there?
Well, I'm a workaholic. I mean, I'd be the happiest guy in the world if I worked 20 hours a week. And yet when I look, my family is important to me, and it doesn't come naturally to me. I have to be very intentional to probably be average at best when it comes to family. And so I remember sitting on a plane and I said, okay, what is it that I want? And more importantly, what is it that I don't want? And I wanted to be done at 5 o'clock. I got tired of, you know, putting the finger up to my kid saying, hey, I just got to take this call, or, you know, leaving Johnny, you know, the soccer game or whatever early because you got an appointment. And I didn't want to work weekends. And, you know, we only have so many summers left. I've got a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old, and an 8-year-old. And I blink. The other day, my wife showed me a picture of my son when he was 4 and we were at the hospital pushing a truck. And I turned and I could smell him. I mean, he's a smelly teenager right now. And I just started crying, because it's going to go by way too fast. And I think in our society, we measure success. A lot of people measure it the wrong way. And at the end of the day, I wanted to measure success by how present I could be with family. And, you know, when you've gone bankrupt and you've almost lost a son to open heart surgery and the challenges that we've had, it gives you a perspective where so much of the stuff that we worry about really doesn't matter.
I know family is huge to you, and it makes me wonder, what was the moment that brought you to this realization that time is not infinite and you have to make your real estate business work for you? Was it Charlie's diagnosis? Was it something after that? What was that moment that made you go, holy shit, I have to change things?
Well, there's layers to it, right? Uh-huh. I think when Charlie was diagnosed, I looked around and I said, there's got to be a better way. And I looked around and there wasn't any real good examples of who I wanted to be like in real estate. I mean, you know, I don't want to dig too deep in there yet. I also grew up in a funeral home. So, I mean, I saw a lot of people die before their time. I've watched people retire, you know, when they were supposed to have their golden years and then get sick. And I just didn't want to do that. I mean, life's too short to sound cliche. And I just didn't want to do it. So I don't know if there's a defining moment where that happened. I just know that I've always been one where I've known where my time is up. So for example, my senior year of high school, I went and played AAA hockey. Why? Because I'd done everything that I needed to do in high school hockey. And it, rather than be the stud my senior year, I went in, I was, you know, the rookie on the team that got his teeth kicked in. And I've always been one who wants to get better and push themselves and not just sit there and take the easy route.
So how is Charlie?
He is, and I don't know how much I can say, he has followed his dream and his passion. I was a hockey player and, you know, none of my kids play contact sports, so it's interesting. And Charlie's a dancer and actor, and he just got picked up for a SAG film. He's going to Utah. It's a big picture film. He was just at the allergist today, and we can put beef into his diet. Yeah. Currently, he was allergic to beef, egg, dairy, pork, and gelatin. Oh, so, I mean, basically anything. You can't go anywhere, and the kid can't eat anything. So, there's a victory there. Tessa is a spitting image of me. She's 8 years old. She's fierce. She's strong. She's a little entrepreneur. She can out-negotiate me every single time. And then you've got Henry, who looks just like me, but he's a kind soul. He's you know, got the engineering type mentality. He's done awesome in gymnastics and band and just a good kid. Like, parenting is the most humbling thing I've ever done. And we decided, even though we were probably just figuring it out, we would throw an exchange student, a 17-year-old from Azerbaijan. I still can't say it right. She's 17. She's Muslim. She's our exchange student. And it's been awesome. Speaking of time, one thing we love about having an exchange student is we don't waste any time. Every weekend, we're doing something to have her experience it. And selfishly, the reason I said yes to it was I know that we take advantage of opportunities much more when we have an exchange student. So, you know, I'm probably doing it selfishly because it makes us be intentional.
Does Tessa love having a sister in the house?
Oh my gosh. So much so that I have to check in with her. It's like, is she being too much? You know, it was interesting. But I went to get our basement finished for her because I think a girl having her own space at 17 was important. And I went to get a quote on it, and the quote was huge. And so my dad and I, we ended up finishing it off. And, you know, it's not perfect yet. Being able to finish out that basement with my dad, you know, he's getting older. He can still do it. And it's neat having enough awareness that I don't know how many more projects I'm going to get to do with my dad or my father-in-law. And rather than choosing more money, so for example, every Friday, my dad comes over and we do projects. Well, you know, that a lot of entrepreneurs would be like, well, I can't give up a whole work day. That could be X amount in revenue. Well, I don't think I'm going to look back and, you know, regret doing another project with my dad or asking my father-in-law for help. And reality is, do I need their help half the time? Probably not. Yet I love a reason to spend time with them.
I think that goes back to your personal definition of success and how you want your life to be panned out and how you want to remember it. That's huge. So what do you think helped you get through that as far as tools? And because you seem like someone that doesn't like lean on people and run to people for advice. You seem like a self-learner. What contributed to you being able to get to this point now? Like the number one thing.
Books. I mean, when you look at, you get 10 to 20 years, people's experience in Audible that you can put on 1.5 times the speed. And I mean, I went back, I read the 4-Hour Work Week shortly after Charlie's diagnosis. And I think I have 224 titles on Audible that I've listened to multiple times. I mean, I'd like everybody to challenge something. Whatever it is that you make per hour, write that down. And the biggest difference is what are you doing outside of those hours that you're trading dollars for hours? Well, 12 years ago, I decided to choose all my hours outside of trading dollars for hours to make an investment in myself. So for example, if you're making $40 an hour and you change that to 24 hours a day, what I find is if you make the investment in yourself and you start making better choices with the hours outside of when you're trading dollars for hours, that can be your income within 5 to 10 years. And I'm just doing that math real quick. So 40 times 24 times 365, that's $350,000 a year. And I don't think people understand that time on task over time will be talent every single time. Back to what you said earlier in the show, Alyssa, a lot of people say, well, yeah, but you're Hank. And I said, well, no, how about you say, I'm not willing to do what Hank's did. And I had 600 flights in 3 years. I've tracked every single hour that I've worked since 2016. I have ADHD. I barely graduated high school. I drop F-bombs. I wear my hat backwards. I don't have much of a filter, but I'm committed and I'm consistent. And that's why I win. And I help people. I help enough people get what you want. I just screwed that up. Help enough people get what they want, you'll get everything that you want. Yeah. I mean, we all know that quote, right?
Yep.
How does someone win with Hank?
They're true to themselves. How they win with me is just be honest, do the work, be transparent, have real conversations. I don't do surface level well. It's funny. I'm much more of an introvert than I ever realized. And I know, Todd, you argue with me on this yet. At the end of the day, I just want people to win. Like I get fueled by people winning, and how people lose with me is just by being full of shit. Like I can't handle that.
How do you define winning?
It all depends on the context that we're talking from. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it, adulting can throw a lot of stuff at you. So, you know, I've heard success has been defined as progress. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to an attitude. You know, even when I'm suffering a loss, I smile because there's a lot more growth and losses than there are wins. So, I mean, winning is just having the right attitude and knowing that none of us are getting out alive, and don't take it that seriously. Good God. Like life's too short.
So for those that are listening to the podcast, they're, you know, on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from, right, Todd? They can't see the 36 to life sign behind you there. Maybe can we dive into that just a little bit? Maybe explain what that is and let's get some questions rolling around that program that you've got put together there.
You know, I was fortunate enough to fly all over North America coaching some of the top real estate agents for industry leader. And I read the Red Book and I was like, oh my gosh, this thing's awesome. Yet I kept seeing people fail time and time again with it. You know, they'd be getting the awards, they'd be getting it, but I knew they hadn't paid their taxes in 2 years, or I knew that their marriage was a complete shit show. And I thought there's got to be a better way. So I started studying choices, because when you look back and connect the dots on people, you can see where they're winning and where things kind of slid off the tracks. And through doing math and a lot of different spreadsheets, I realized that the most profitable real estate model is 24 listings, 12 of which that are going to be buyers. That's 36 deals. You can do that without an assistant, without a transaction coordinator. Therefore, the service level never drops because you've got your hand in it all. It's not scalable and leveraged to be at. I look at everybody, you got to think big and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, I'd be happy to compare my net P&L to any of these big teams. I mean, here's the challenge with real estate is it's tough to keep things equitable for all parties on an ongoing, consistent basis. And 36 to Life is just saying, you know what? I'm going to do something that's ordinary, which is selling 36 transactions, yet it can make my life extraordinary. Because if you do a better job, you can raise your average sale price. And what I find is when people just really are okay with more isn't better, you raise your average sale price 10 to 25% a year, you freeze your lifestyle, and now you can start building some actual wealth. Because most real estate agents that I know, they're high income, low net worth. And it's because they get on that lifestyle wheel. They're not watching their numbers. And really, it was just a way to simplify getting stability to the reason why most of us got in real estate in the first place, which was freedom, wealth, and flexibility. That was a long answer for your question, Kelly.
No, it was perfect. And you're absolutely right, man. I've coached a lot of teams. I've had a team. I've had a brokerage. I totally get the whole idea of the net P&L versus, you know, the GCI, which a lot of teams like to measure off of and measure success and stuff like that. And, you know, some of the most successful teams, it's really unfortunate that the people in business look to business leaders based on, you know, real estate is the only industry that I know of where people look to leaders in the industry based on how much they make, right? Yeah. You don't look at junior lawyers in a law firm, and they don't look up to the leaders within that law firm based on the money that they charge per hour, right? This never made any sense to me in business or real estate. And so I think when you pull back the curtain,
what if we measured success at how oftentimes we get to say yes to our loved ones?
Yeah, exactly.
That's huge.
Right.
I mean, I can tell you the last time I said no to one of my kids when they're like, "Hey, Dad, you want to go do this?" Or, "Hey, Dad, can we do this?" Or, "Hey," I mean, at the end of the day, I look. I think our values or our celebrations are all screwed up in real estate because ordinary isn't celebrated at all. And sorry for jumping in there, Kelly.
No, that's totally fine. I think in business overall, I mean, you know, it doesn't really matter what industry you're in. If you're an entrepreneur, the problem with entrepreneurism is that, you know, the hustle, the grind is celebrated. You know, working 20, 22 hours a day is celebrated. You're not winning unless you're working umpteen hours to, you know, fulfill whatever project, whatever deadline, whatever goal you have. And I 100% agree with you, Hank, man. You know, my success is being able to go be fully present at my kids' ball game. Be fully present in the dugout while I'm coaching the kids at baseball, being able to go and sit down and watch a soccer game and not have to worry about my phone going off because it's shut off and I'm fully present. Right. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs really should take a good listen to what you're talking about here in terms of measuring success. Alyssa, I thought that was a great question. Like, how do you measure success? Right. How do you measure success in business and life and entrepreneurism? And I think it's a tough thing to do when you don't know what your values are.
But I think when you figure out your standards and then you create boundaries around them, and I think too many entrepreneurs are thinking too much. I think that's one reason I've been able to be successful is I don't think all that much. I decide an outcome that I want, and then I put standards in place. And then when I don't get an outcome that I want, I put a new standard in place and then create boundaries around that and just rinse and repeat. And it's really not that hard if you're willing to just put in the work and be consistent. And I think people are looking for the easy button and they're always looking for an easier way. How about you just do the work? I mean, there's nothing easy about success. Otherwise, everybody would have it. It's just you got to commit to it.
If you're enjoying this episode, please rate, review, and follow the Success Coaching Podcast on Apple Podcasts.
You know, something you taught me early on was part of being successful, and part of success is the people that are around you. You know, when I started my business, I was like, oh, well, I'll talk to whoever and I will take in whoever because that's what I need to do because I'm new. So tell me a little bit about that, about the people that you surround yourself with and kind of what brought you to that point of, well, I'm going to surround myself with only these people that match my goal.
Well, I think it started with, you know, Facebook is going to change what we look at as friends. You can't have 5,000 friends. I mean, when you look at, I look at when a friend's in need, you jump into action. And I started to study how many relationships you could actually have, and all the people way smarter than me said about 120. And we've all heard this, you are who you surround yourself with. So I just made decisions. I said, you know, what is it that I want in life? Who do I want to be? What do I want to represent? And I started to, I know you can't see this, but I have these right here. And what I do is I look at every relationship that I have and say, what do they bring to the table? I don't want anybody around me who's not working on their relationship. Why? Relationships are hard. It's hot. It's a lot of work to stay married and stay happy. So I want other people. And it's not that, you know, people around me can't go through a divorce yet. I want people who are willing to put in the work and want to be good dads and want to be good financial stewards. So another standard that I have is if you're in my top 36 people, I can ask to see your P&L. I can ask to see your financial numbers, because if you don't know your financial numbers, you're not going to be able to make decisions from the right place or be willing to take some risks when an opportunity comes up. And so every time I have a new pillar post, what I do is I look around and say, okay, do I have the right team around me? I need a certain number of people around me when we won a national championship playing hockey. And then when I went and bought 42 rental properties by the age of 22, I needed a completely different team. And I think some people allow people to stick around longer than what they were meant to. And they romanticize about relationships and what they are, what they aren't. And I think I've just got real intentional on what I want out of life and make sure that 36 of my 96 people that I'm surrounding myself with, that I bet that I can get the outcomes that I'm looking for. You know, and Todd's one of those people where we talk, you know, randomly yet. I appreciate Todd. He's someone that if I have something that I'm thinking about doing or making a chess move, I reach out to him because he does know me so well and he'll ask great questions and I value the relationship with, and you know, if you know me, I don't blow a lot of smoke yet. It's good to have you as a friend, man.
Is that my cue to also say the same thing about you?
No.
Okay. I want to get back to your struggles. We know you've had struggles and it's easy for me to do this now. I'm not Hank.
Well, let's talk about when I realized that I can no longer be the team leader in the market center and I need to jump back into sales. I was circle prospecting on the West Coast at 9 o'clock at night because we needed to make more money because the team leader role wasn't doing it. And so I'd put the kids down and I'd go circle prospect for Chris Heller's team. And I realized that I just wasn't going to be effective doing that. So I decided to jump back in sales and then an opportunity came my way. And it was a great opportunity. And I remember when they asked me to fly out to Austin, Texas, I didn't even have room on my credit card to buy the ticket. I mean, it was a struggle. And, you know, I ended up getting passed through and they asked me to go to North Carolina and so here I am faced with, I'm leaving a job because I don't have the resources. And now I'm going to go travel week to week, with no income. And so, you know, that was June of 2012. So from June of 2012 till January 1st, I mean, I was traveling every single week, robbing Peter to pay Paul. I borrowed $20,000 from a family member, maxed out every single credit card. And then I was, asked to go to Fargo, North Dakota in January and launch a class. I mean, when you look at it, knowing what I know now, there's no way that I should have been able to figure that out. Yet failure wasn't an option. And I did whatever needed to be done. And I think that's what a lot of people miss is, you know, walking through the front door and your father-in-law saying, hold on a second. And he goes and gets his checkbook and he goes, how much do you need? And I remember being pissed because I thought my wife called him. And he goes, no, I've been watching you. I have no clue how you're doing this. And he wrote me a check. I mean, do you know what it's like going to your father-in-law asking for $20,000 when, I mean, talk about swallowing your pride and you're eating as much as you can when you're teaching the class because you don't want to put anything else in your credit card because you're not sure if you're going to be able to book the next flight. I mean, talk about doing within while doing without. And then my wife calling me and her saying, hey, we got Henry deodorant today. I said, I'm done. She goes, what do you mean you're done? I said, I'm not missing out on another life experience. And she goes, we just built her dream home. I said, I don't care. I got to get home. This is crazy being on the road. And we had a 1-year non-compete. So everything that I knew I had to start fresh. And I think what pisses me off is people want to make excuses to why they're not doing something. Therefore, they point out all the stupid things you've ever done. I've done a lot of stupid things. You know what? I learned from them. And then I got back up. And, you know, I like who I am today. Did I like myself in my 20s when I was probably an alcoholic and a womanizer? And not really. You know, I'm in my 30s. I was doing the best that I could. Yet, Hank, today, I'm pretty proud of who I am today.
You mentioned borrowing that money. That must have been either extreme confidence or extreme stubbornness or a mixture of both in yourself, right? Not being able to rub two dimes together to even really, you know, get across the country. Yet you had this vision of what it is that you wanted to do. And just, so what was it, Hank? Was it a combination of both? Was it stupidity? Like, what was it? To be clear, I'm not calling you stupid. I'm just saying, like,
let's face it. There's probably a little bit of narcissism in there thinking that I could pull it off. And I think all entrepreneurs have a little bit of that. And yet the way I looked at it was I'm either way. So what's another $20,000, but I don't want to end up, you know, I'm this close. I've got to at least say I did it all. And, my father-in-law, you know, knowing a little bit more of the story, he'd been on my side more than he had been on his side. And he actually thanked me. He goes, Hank, he ran a worldwide company before he sold it. And he goes, there's times we can make payroll. And there's ladies there that just wrote us checks. He goes, it was nice to be able to be on the other side and see somebody working their butt off and go for it. And I think it was fun for him to be able to pay it back. And I mean, my father-in-law is like my best friend. And, so it's just, it's neat. You know, sometimes people don't want help, but I don't know about you. One of the best feelings in the world is helping someone. And some, you know, sometimes I ask myself, do I do it because I actually want to help people or do I do it because it feels really good? I mean, who cares? I mean, if you're helping people, who cares what the reasoning is? And so at the end of the day, I think if you like helping people, you also have to be willing to let people help you.
I knew you during this time and most people around Hank at this time would have no idea any of this was going on in his life. I mean, he, you know, we fake it till we make it, right? And so Hank was a very good actor in this time, portraying that everything was okay.
The reality was I had super high anxiety and didn't even realize it. And through lots of therapy and through being diagnosed with ADHD and getting on Ritalin, I mean, I was faking it because I wanted to explode on the inside and my anxiety was making me want to have an anxiety attack. And so a lot of times I showed up as an extrovert because I mean, I was like wanting to crawl through my skin.
Yet you also had a goal and you saw an end to the struggle. You know, I had the same journey as you did, right? You left a job that wasn't paying the bills and you somehow hired me to take that for you.
I'm a good salesman.
Yeah, and looking back on that one, and we have a lot of the same path there. Yet the struggles that you went through, when you could see the prize at the end, and you knew that you were good enough to get there. And so, for people out there that are in the same situation, Hank, you had an idea where you were going. You knew how to get there. You knew what it took. Many times, people get lost and don't know where they're going, or they don't believe in it. What would your advice be to them?
Get clear on what you want and then commit. You never know what the right decision is. Just make it the right decision. So, you know, understand the math. Like I knew that being a real estate agent full time wasn't going to give me the life that I wanted. And so it was no longer an option to be the traditional real estate agent. And so when you get real clear on what you don't want and you don't settle. So for example, when I was done whoring around, I decided what I wanted in a wife. I knew that I wanted somebody that could make me a better person and someone that would be a great mom. So if I ever met someone and they didn't have those standards, I didn't go on a second date. And so I think you get real clear and make decisions and then make the next right decision and then make the next right decision and then make the next one and just do the work. I mean, I got tattooed on my hand here. We got skill set, time on task, experimentation until you get a victory. And then once you get a victory, you get confidence. And then you just keep repeating that. And when you keep repeating that, at some point you get to momentum and you got a solid foundation. Yet I think people want to skip important parts of it, like experimenting. You're going to spend 90% of your time to get 10% of the results until that switches. And now here's the other challenge that people do is once it switches and they've identified the 10% that gets 90% of the results, they keep doing the 90%. Why? Why not build a new success code and get some leveraged income? And I think that's one thing I've been able to do is rather than peak and be at good, I've been willing to go backwards. And that's why I have this other tattoo on here, patience with a sense of urgency. I think a lot of us, I was really good with urgency, yet I often times lack patience. And once I found patience with a sense of urgency, that's when my world really started to get huge momentum. And it's been pretty exciting.
If I could be completely honest with you, the first time that you showed me that arrow and the patience with sense of urgency, I could have reached through the computer and strangled your neck because I felt like I didn't have time to be patient. Like I had a family, I had a business I was trying to create. I can't be patient. I just have to be urgent. So people that feel like I felt right now, how do you like, can we dive a little bit deeper into what you mean by patience with a sense of urgency? Because I think that's huge.
Well, yeah, you know, people usually have one of two things. They have too much patience and they're getting ready to get ready, or they have too much urgency and they're always on to the next shiny thing, looking for an easier way. And, you know, Alyssa, your experiences, like a lot of experiences with me is a lot of people, their first impression of me is negative because I am pretty raw and unfiltered and I cut through the mix. And, you know, that's where the 50-25-1 came from was I just needed people to not be neutral with me. And so if they weren't neutral, I was at least able to help them think or cause pause. And so when we're looking at the patience is time on task will be talent every single time. And yet people quit. I mean, I look at EXP. I was there 18 months before I got my first victory, spending 3 to 5 hours a week. We were less than 1,000 agents. And I just kept saying to myself, I got 3 to 5 hours a week. Just keep the time on task. Keep experimenting. And if this thing works, it could completely change your world. And so fast forward, I mean, we've hit our freedom number and then some. It took less than 400 hours over the course of 3 years to make over $1 million. Yet I couldn't have done that in a short amount of time. What it was time on task over time, 3 to 5 hours a week of being intentional. And most people aren't willing to wait 18 months for something to actually hit or have any sort of evidence of success. So, I mean, Alyssa, in your situation, you say you didn't have time. Well, what are you going to do if it's not working anyways?
I mean, well, it's that feeling of instant gratification that I feel like our society all has right now. And when you start a business, you want that success right then. When you start as a real estate agent, you want to sell that first house for $1 million right then. And so it's really hard to imagine sitting and waiting. But then when you put it into perspective, it took you 3 years to reach your goal. That's nothing. But you could have quit within 12 months because you didn't have the patience and then you would really have nothing. So that's huge.
Well, I think that's where it goes back to the 90% or 80% they were talking about is once you identify the 20% that makes 80% of the money, bring in a new success code, bring in something new where you don't screw up what's working because you're going for significance. Go be a beginner again. And I think that's what oftentimes people don't want to do is they don't want to go back to it being a beginner. And so, yeah, it's fun when you start to put the equations together. It gets pretty frustrating when you know what someone's capable of. You and I talked a little bit about this yesterday is I'm having a tough time putting up with bullshit because I know what's at stake if people don't pull their head out of their rear end.
Yeah. And you're very good at, and I mentioned this yesterday, at allowing conversation to paint the picture of what if you don't put the work in? What's going to happen if you stop right now? No longer do the work. What's that picture going to look like? And just in conversation, you paint that picture and it opens your client's eyes to the point of, oh my gosh, if I don't do this, it's going to be detrimental. And what I need to do is really not that hard. I just need to do it. And I think that comes back to your tracking your time and being accountable for your hours so that you can look back and say, I'm not fulfilling what I need to because I'm not doing what I need to.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that their game plan doesn't work. Meaning when they do the math on their game plan, it's not going to, for example, I was talking to a guy the other day who was making $80,000 a year. And when we did the math on what he wants out of life, like it's not going to work. He's not going to be able to pay for his kids' weddings or college or whatever the case may be. So why not change something to a different occupation that has scalability and margins and has the ability to even give yourself a chance to win? And I think so many people don't really realize that they're screwed before they even get started. Or I'm going to go sell 60 houses this year. Okay, well, let's look at the math. You're going to work 2,000 hours, go to 60 closings, which is 60 times two. So you get 120 hours there. You're going to go to inspections, which is 4 hours, four times 60. You know, you start looking at the math and their whole game plan doesn't work before they even get started because they haven't slowed down enough to see if it even makes sense.
So Hank, if someone is interested in talking to you or going over their hours, 36 to life coaching, where do they go? Where can they find Hank?
That's an excellent question. And I'm not really sure. I'm a little bit of a mess right now. So Facebook is where I direct everybody from a message standpoint. Right now, a lot of what I'm doing is separating myself from having access. And I believe that information is a commodity. So my goal right now is to give away all the information that I can. And then what people pay for is proximity or implementation. And the reasoning for that is I'm looking for people to do life with, business partners. So, you know, I guess if you find yourself as someone who feels there's got to be a better way, you are willing to cut against the grain and think for yourself, and you're looking for a recurring income, not just trading dollars for hours, you're looking for some leveraged income, and you're willing to draw the arrow backwards, and you think that you'd like to do business with me, reach out. We'll set up a calendar link, and here's my philosophy in life. If you're in relationship with me, you'll never be able to say I wasn't there for you. Alyssa and Todd, have you ever reached out to me and not found myself available?
Nope.
No.
Never. You won't outproduce me. I used to say you won't outwork me, but a lot of people outwork me, yet you won't outproduce me because I think results matter. First time you waste my time, I'll give you a heads up. Hey, this doesn't work. I'm not Google. Don't ask me that question. That's a, you know, Google that stuff. I mean, that's a complete waste of our time. And some people think I'm an ass for that. Yet I want the higher level conversations. The second time I'll warn you, and the third time I just will never talk to you again. And what I find is if you have that sort of standards, people show up a certain way when you are going to be in communication. And I found the level of relationships that I have because people don't waste my time. People don't message me after 5 o'clock because they know that family is important to me and it's easier for me to work.
Hold up.
It's time for the lightning round.
I'm going to throw 4 to 5 questions at Hank. He's going to answer these questions as quickly as he can without thinking. I know it's tough for a guy that's so cerebral, but we'll ask him to do his best. So when are you most productive?
In the morning.
That's what everybody says. What's your favorite season?
Football fall.
Perfect. I like this guy already. Name one thing that you would change about yourself.
My yellow teeth. I don't know why that just came to mind. Pretty much anything that's needed changed, I just I've been working on. So yellow teeth is the only thing I really haven't addressed.
What was your worst subject in school?
All of them.
What's your favorite cake flavor?
Ice cream cake.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. So good with crushed butter fingers on top. The ice cream sandwiches. It's so good.
Yes.
So give me a steak over dessert any day.
Yeah, I hear you there.
If you had a boat, what would the name be?
Most likely would have to do with revenue share because I think in branding. So it'd be Rev Boat or something along those lines.
What quote or saying do people spout yet is completely BS?
I like that question. I'm going to actually do some journaling around this. I think that's a great question. I think so many people, audio doesn't match video. And most of the people that I meet, their audio actually doesn't match their video.
Where is the worst smelling place you've been?
My upstairs this morning smelled awful. We got a cat up there and I thought, good God, what's happened? No, actually the worst place was I was working for the funeral home and a guy had been dead in an apartment complex for over 2 weeks. And I was supposed to go up there and I refused to. And my dad said, well, you might not have a job. And I said, that's fine. And a firefighter on his first day got to go up and help remove this person. And they came down and threw up. And it was the most God awful ride home I've ever had in my life. And I think it was at that moment I decided not to be a mortician.
Understandable.
Ooh.
What was going through your mind when you were speaking 2 years ago and you decided to disrobe?
Oh, this is awesome. A good question.
So we were at shareholders and I was going to go up and do a speech. And then 10 minutes before, I'm like, no. Because earlier in that day, like everybody is putting on this front and they want to look good and be right besides just do the work. So, Kelly, it was hilarious. I went up in front of, I don't know, there's 300 or 500 people there. And I took off my hat and I said, well, I've gone bankrupt. Took off my shirt. I said, I've been through years of marriage therapy. Took off my pants and I had my swimsuits on. And I said, I had a kid go through open heart surgery. And then I took off my sandals and I said, if all of you could give up looking good and being right, you'd have a much better chance of having success. And I did a 20-minute speech up there. And it was hilarious. It was probably one of my best speeches that I ever, and nobody remembers anything that I said, yet they can remember being there that day. And to this day, I have not been invited back to speak.
Oh, man. Sorry, I missed that.
True story.
I've just seen pictures.
It was classic.
So if someone just wants to dip their toes into what you teach and what you've created, do you have courses that they can purchase?
We will. You know, if you say yes to this, you're saying no to something else. Frankly, we've put some of the courses together and I haven't put them up yet. The biggest thing would be just go to YouTube. Go to YouTube. If you like the videos and you're actually going to watch them all the way through, hit the like button, you know, subscribe. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I think that real estate's going to change. When you look at the consumer basis, I don't think any consumer is super excited about paying 6% out there. And when you have an industry where the consumer doesn't love paying for the services, that's a challenge. And so one of the things that I am doing is looking to build other skill sets that can transfer. And YouTube is one of the things that I'm focused on. So I'm putting all my stuff on there for free. I don't think that I'm going to monetize the courses. I think I'm just better off giving the information away. And then, because I mean, let's face it, you can YouTube and get the answer for anything now. Yet proximity and implementation is what people pay for.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to follow or subscribe to the Success Coaching Podcast and like us on Facebook at Success Magazine Coaching.